I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking hour?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
James, are you going to be rocking the beard throughout the Christmas period?
Yeah.
You've committed to that now?
Yeah.
It's a good beard.
Oh, it's excellent. Thank you.
It's not as... I thought because... So you haven't really got many grey hairs, but I thought you've got kind of an orangey tint to the beard around the sides, but there's no grey in it.
Well, I've got some grey in the chin bit.
Are you on that Louis Figo vibe?
I thought it would be more ginger, to be fair.
There's a lot of ginger in the sides.
Yeah. It's a layered thing.
Yeah. So it's got some quite autumnal tones in there.
A few autumnal notes.
Yeah.
That's nice. It's a good beard. Can you grow a good beard?
You know what? I can grow a beard very, very quickly, but it's extremely bristly and painful, so I'm not having it.
You got to get through that phase, haven't you?
You do.
It's really itchy, and then after about maybe a week, it's fine.
Or you could just not have a beard.
Yeah, you could. Yeah. The dust is settling.
all over the Champions League group stage. It's over now.
It's going to be ever so dusty by February.
Is it going to be? Is it really?
Well,
yeah,
it will be,
they'll have to blow the dust off again.
Is that a climate change gag?
Yeah. Shout out Greta Thunberg.
No one's laughing.
Time person of the year.
Yeah.
That reminds me of that Bob Monkhouse joke. Do you know that joke?
No.
He says, when I was a kid, I told everyone I wanted to be a stand-up comedian, and they all laughed. Not laughing now, are they?
it's like the gagging joker.
What are the headline stories from the Champions League? And I can give you a little Christmas selection box of options if you want. Ajax losing to Valencia to drop into the Europa League. We'll all be sad to see the back of Salzburg, so maybe we'll talk about a couple of those stories. But for me, maybe the fact that only teams from the top five European leagues have made it through to the knockout stages this year. And there's been a bit of pearl clutching and hand-wringing about that this week. What do you guys make of that as a situation?
Well, I think it's a natural consequence of the reform of the Champions League, which was very much pushed by the ECA, headed by Andrea Agnelli, the president of Juventus, to lock in four places per league guaranteed for, particularly in Italy's case, Italy, who had for a long time only had three places, only of which two are guaranteed. And we always saw that the third Italian team coming back early from pre-season to play those playoffs invariably lost them. And now you've got a situation whereby that's just not a factor for them. So just on a kind of...
But how does that make it better for them? Just because there's a greater chance, quite simply, there's a greater chance of those teams going through because there's more of them.
Well, there's more of them. There's I would say not only kind of one more, there's two more because of just the record that the Italian teams that finished third had in the playoffs.
That's a big deal.
They would often go out. The number you can reel them off. I remember
Roma, Udinese.
Yeah, thanks, Andy. Napoli as well, yeah. Against Athletic Bilbao. That third team is guaranteed, and then there's another team that's guaranteed. So just by sheer dint of numbers, the odds are stacked against a lot of these teams that are outside the Power Five, the Big Five in Europe. So. In some respects, you can say this is what the likes of Agnelli, Rummenigge wanted as the kind of compromise to stave off, for now, a European Super League. Because essentially, when you look at the names that are going to be in the round of 16 of the Champions League, it does read like a Super League, aside from, say, the presence of a team like Atalanta, who, you know, going by the same economics... stratification that we see across Europe, they should be locked out of their own top four in Serie A.
Haven't they made enough money in the Champions League already to pay their wage bill for the entire season?
Yes,
so it's a game changer for them.
39 million from the Champions League, and their wage bill is 36 million, which is staggering, really, because that wage bill is mid-table in Serie A. It's not like it's fifth, sixth, and there's a bit of variance, and all of a sudden they can get in. They have completely outperformed their wage bill. So, but aside from that, looking across Europe, it is very much the elite, the teams that have, well, at least by geography, are in the richest, wealthiest leagues.
Andy, are there any teams that haven't made it through the group stage that perhaps you thought would?
Yeah, I think if we talk about the, I guess, ownership of the Champions League by those big leagues, we should look at the other teams that didn't get through. So not just the teams like Inter that didn't get through, but
tough group for them.
But the fact that Salzburg weren't a million miles away.
Yeah.
The fact that in that group with the Leipzig and Lyon qualified from, Zenit could have quite easily qualified from that. Benfica, if they'd have held on to that lead they had at Leipzig, remember they were leading 2-0 at Leipzig going into the 90th minute, and if they'd have gone on to beat Zenit as they did in the final game, we'd maybe be talking about them going through. So, you know, I don't think we should be talking about this being the moment where it's all come home to roost. I think it's very, very fine margins. But as James said, this has been in the post for a while. Because of the fact that the top four teams from the top four leagues have been getting through automatically. I guess some would argue that does make the playoffs less foreboding for some of the other teams from other leagues who are, you know, say the third place team in France, or the, who've not had to qualify in the last couple of years, or you know, the qualifiers from Russia or Turkey. You know, it does give them more of a chance. So there are two sides to it. But the other thing is, I think you always have to say that UEFA have got this sort of balancing act. I mean, people keep saying a European Super League is inevitable. I guess the reality of that is, I don't think it's inevitable in terms of we're going to wake up one morning and there's going to be this breakaway. I just think it is incremental change. The fact that it's happening year by year. First, the reformatting of the European Cup as the Champions League in 1992, and everything that's happened in the meantime. And it's an incredible balancing act for UEFA to keep the biggest clubs happy and keep the most unruly clubs, I suppose, like Juventus and Bayern happy, and yet make it competitive. I mean, that's incredibly difficult, and I don't think you can put it all on the organizer of the competition for the way it's changed. I mean, I would actually say there've been some positive changes for the Champions League in the past 10 or 15 years. I mean, we were talking, weren't we, James, before we came on air, the fact that you know, Atalanta are the first team to have like got 1 point from their first four games and then gone on to qualify in the group. Yeah. But of course, they're the second team to have lost the first three games in the group and gone through, the other being Newcastle United in, what was it, 2002, I think.
That'll seem like a lifetime ago to Newcastle United fans everywhere, I expect.
Exactly, but that was in the second group stage. Mm. And you can't tell me that there not being a second group stage anymore in the Champions League is not a good thing. It's a very good thing that it's not there anymore. So people saying that the Champions League's changes have just been a one-way street over the last 10, 15 years, I don't think that's correct.
Well, I mean, it's only going to get worse. Yeah. Sorry on this election day to bring that to you. Mm. But if you look at what reforms are coming for the next rights tender, a new competition, which some people thought, always missed the Cup Winners' Cup. Wouldn't it be great to have that back? This isn't the Cup Winners' Cup. Mm. It's the wonderfully named UEFA Conference. Mm. I mean, they've really focus grouped that. I mean, certainly.
I miss the name of the conference since the conference has become the National League, for what it's worth.
And while it is kind of more European football for more clubs, it is another way just to kind of make the Champions League a higher concentration of elite teams.
Yeah. You know, and so it's this kind of creeping death idea. But James, what do you make of Andy's point that it's not necessarily a tipping point, it's just a fine margin, sliding doors moment? Because last season, I know we saw Ajax go very deep in the tournament, and maybe we'll come on to them shortly. But
exactly, they only needed a point.
Yeah, there were only two teams outside of that traditional top five in Porto and Ajax who made it through to the knockout phase last season. So it just feels like the human brain's got a kind of interesting way of going, right, that's a pattern, we're going to focus on that now, whereas last season it was only two teams different and no one said a thing.
Mm. No, and yeah, there was a lot that going to even the final match day. I mean, I think on Tuesday and Wednesday, I think there were in total only maybe four groups that still had a kind of sense of jeopardy about them.
Yeah.
But certainly, I mean, we could have, Andy's mentioned those teams, we could have had Salzburg, for example.
I'll be sad to see the back of Salzburg, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
They've been really fun.
Yeah. And I think
that would have been a plucky underdog story, wouldn't it?
Well,
no, but on the pitch, they've been fun.
Right.
And what's actually happened, I think, sorry to wrestle it away from you, James, but I think it's probably a good time to talk about Salzburg chiefly as well, because we've seen Haaland and his agent being carted around all over the place.
Not just his agent. Yeah. Who's his agent?
Minarola.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you.
But they
publicity machine, Andy.
Do you think with Salzburg? I mean, we saw that they played this kind of interesting attacking football. It felt to me like they were just attack, leave themselves open. But because all the attention's been on Lars's friend Erling Braut Haaland, they've it's kind of been overlooked a bit. They've got two or three other good players as well.
Well, I don't think anymore. I mean, the reports as we were coming in this morning to record the pod is that Liverpool are ready to go for
all of them.
Minamino.
Going to sign all of them. Oh, really? Okay.
And that there's a buyout clause in his contract of around £7 million pounds, which is tiny.
Wow. I mean, there are Liverpool could take a shit and lose £7 million pounds. That's the dominance of the Premier League. So they're gonna hoover him up, aren't they?
So I mean, we're not even getting to the end of the season, and there's the potential for a team like Salzburg to be broken up. Now, you know, as Andy mentioned when he said plucky little underdog story. This is a team that has the wealth from the RB empire behind them, and also, you know, has succession plan after succession plan. This is very much their business model. You know, one day they did not aspire to keep Erling Haaland for the rest of his career and for him to be, you know, end his career scoring 3,000 goals in Austria.
he's already done that.
This season. This was always going to be on the cards. It's just, it's
but he's only 19.
We're on a fast track.
What about Hwang, another player who's caught the eye and looked fantastic.
He's been terrific. And I think sometimes, because we're in the age of the superstar, you can look at players in isolation, but it's really not all been about Haaland. It's been about the partnership between him and Hwang, which is incredibly intuitive. Two very intelligent players. Hwang always knows the run that Haaland wants to make, as does Junuzovic, if we're looking further back up the pitch. A more experienced player, and that's something we saw against Liverpool, wasn't it? That they tried to hit that channel for Haaland all the time, because he does love the ball in front of him. But like James, I think Salzburg are in a very good position to regenerate, because, you know, it's taken them a long time to get here. They've done very well in the Europa League. And I think if they hold on to those players, I think they could be one of the favourites going through. I mean, you always look at the teams in third place in their Champions League group falling into the Europa League and changing the picture. And they're definitely one of the ones I think that comes up along with Inter and along with Ajax. But if you go back to, 2015, when Oscar Garcia was made coach of Salzburg, that was a sea change for them. Because in the Red Bull Empire, and yes, we realise they're separate entities now, etc., etc. But that was when Leipzig were really on the fast track to success. And there was a bit of a reordering of priorities. And that has only increased since Leipzig have established themselves in the Bundesliga and established themselves as a genuine title contender. And I think the interesting thing is that Oscar Garcia was brought in not because of his work, particularly with Watford and Brighton, but because of his background at Barcelona. The fact that he's someone who understands about player development, who understands about an academy. And I remember talking to him shortly after they were knocked out for one of what seemed about 15 times from the playoff round of the Champions League and didn't get into the Champions League group. And of course, they only broke that cycle this year. And him saying, well, look, the team they lost, I think they were knocked out by Dinamo Zagreb that year. And him saying, well, you know, we had 4 19-year-olds in the lineup. I don't know what people expect. We're starting a different way.
It's a very young team now, isn't it? Even?
Yeah. A lot of those big players. Really, the only experienced players in there are Ulma, the captain,
the fullback,
and left back.
Yeah, yeah.
And Junuzovic. That's it, really. Apart from that, they're mostly under 24 and in some cases under 21.
Separate point to draw from the final Champions League match day. And you can say it was because it was the final Champions League match day that we saw this. But you've got Ansu Fati becoming the youngest ever Champions League goal scorer, scoring the winning goal at San Siro for Barcelona against Inter. You look at two of Real Madrid's three goals. It's the 18-year-old Rodrigo and 19-year-old Vinicius Junior.
Mm. Is this a link to Joaquin's hat-trick last weekend?
No, no, but I think... And then I was watching Napoli Genk, and you had Van der Voort become the youngest ever goalkeeper to make his make an appearance in the Champions League. The game is getting younger. I mean, it's the, and we now look at players. I mean, maybe I'm looking at this in an Italian perspective, where you're young until you're about 35. but
and you still live with your mum, right?
Exactly. you know, ultimately, it's incredible how you're already looking at players who, I say, begin their careers in Champions League football, 16, 17, by the time they get to 19, 20, like you look at Mbappe now, you think, it feels like Mbappe's been around for like five,
yeah.
6 years.
Celebrate his 21st birthday last week, I believe. Yeah.
And you think of the kind of the quality of football that he's got under his belt already. It's a time to be young.
What we're seeing, I think, is we used to see, and to an extent we do still see this, but the cycle's definitely moving on, where you have a team of varied ages normally, and it's the done thing to bring a couple of young players in. But the idea is still, in a lot of cases, you need experience around them. I think what we're going to see is we're actually going to see a vastly younger teams with one or two experienced players in there as kind of old heads.
Yeah, you know,
and
I agree.
That's going to be how the game's going to go.
And Salzburg have been ahead of the curve for a while. Like I said,
both their centre halves are 21, aren't they?
Yeah, and you know it's not much different at Leipzig. Actually, no. they've got the best young defence in Europe with Upamecano and Ibrahima Konate. But I think it all ties into a philosophy, doesn't it? This was their idea from way back, and this is why they got Oscar Garcia in. They wanted to bring down the age of the team, and it informs the way they play as well. I mean, you look at the way they went for Liverpool, you look at the way they pressed, you look at the way they got up the pitch, and you think, where does this energy come from? Well, this energy comes from them being really young. Now, obviously, they weren't able to carry that on after the first Liverpool goal. I mean, it's another trait, isn't it, of a very young team, that once their heads begin to drop, it's very difficult to lift them up and get out of it. And they just had nothing left in the tank after Liverpool got those two goals in double quick time. But, you know, they'll be back. I've no doubt about that, whether it's in the Europa League or next season.
Can we have a little mention for Lyon? It's strange scenes there after Lyon goes through.
You could say.
I will say, and then you're going to tell me why I'm wrong normally. That's how it works. Lyon go through to the knockout stage. It should be a source of great great celebration. There's some kind of scuffle involving a banner. Memphis tries to grab the banner, I think. He then claims later he was spat on by Lyon fans who were unhappy. Andy, I'm sort of fudging this, but I think they were unhappy about a certain player's performance, and Memphis took exception to that and said we should all be united, and it all got a little bit nasty.
What happened is, and this goes back to what we were talking about on here a month or so ago, about Marcelo, the former captain of Lyon, after he exchanged words with some supporters at Lisbon Airport after the game they lost at Benfica. He's been persona non grata amongst a section of the hardcore.
Airport scuffles are one of my favourite scuffles. I think it's probably just below supermarket on the undignified scale of where a scuffle should happen and shouldn't happen. Like a player having a scuffle with a fan in an airport is, to me, just lovely stuff.
Oh, I think it's not real unless it involves coaching staff. Carlos Queiroz, he was a fan.
In tracksuits, right?
Yeah. Has to be by the baggage carousel as
what,
well.
What fans have also got to realise, it's like, okay, set the scene, you're at the baggage carousel, you want to have a little pop at a player. I mean, don't do that, but say you didn't want to do that, right? What's going to happen? Well, I'll tell you what, one, straight away, you're at a disadvantage. You're either pissed or you've got a hangover, and you're not wearing suitable clothing for it, probably. They're going to be in training gear. They're professional athletes, and they're well-organised and used to working together.
And they've probably got a trolley. You don't want the trolley in the ankles.
Man, that's the worst injury you could get.
It's never nice, is it, when you bumped into some family of four bumps into you
when you turn around and it's Kevin Keegan with a load of Bulgarian pottery. That's the last thing you need. Lyon, talk about Lyon, sorry.
Yeah, so there's been this banner doing the rounds that says, it's got a picture of a donkey on it, and it says Marcelo Degage, which means Marcelo clear off.
Right.
And that has been doing the rounds. There was someone, the person holding it was on the pitch as the players were celebrating this fantastic comeback, actually. They were 2-0 down and pretty much out of the Champions League at halftime. Mm. They came back to 2-2. Memphis was a huge part of that, scored the equaliser. And of course, combined with Zenit's 3-0 loss at Benfica, it meant they went through. Now, the players were approaching the Virage Nord, where most of the hardcore are. And Memphis spied this guy with the banner and, understandably, wanting to protect his teammate, he tried to take it off him. And then there were a lot of people getting involved. There were some angry fans. Very much like some of the pre-general election coverage in the UK this week. There are videos and there were no punches thrown.
Right.
But Memphis went on camera afterwards and talked about it, and he looked quite teary. He was upset. And he said, look, you know, I've been that guy before and I don't want to be that guy now. But the fact is, I've got to stand up for my teammates. And he's the captain. And it's interesting because so few people thought he was a suitable captain when he was appointed. And why would you appoint him as captain? You think of him as flaky, individualistic, outrageously talented as well.
Pains you to sell these things, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is exactly what a captain should do. Work to keeping a team together, keeping the dressing room together. And that really has vindicated Rudy Garcia. Rudy Garcia, who's had his own issues with the fans, of course. And this isn't an isolated incident. Because of the reaction from that hardcore towards Marcelo, that reaction towards Rudy Garcia, I was there last week, and when they read out the team, Rudy Garcia's name's booed. This is the atmosphere in some sections of the stadium has been poisonous, and this has been coming for a while. Now, I think to finally have a moment, because the club haven't really wanted to deal with it, to have the most important player in the team and the captain, who are now one and the same, step forward and say, okay, I'm going to deal with this.
Yeah, you feel like maybe it shouldn't have been left to him to do that.
Yeah, maybe not. But there are people saying, oh, how can Memphis come back from this? Well, I think it strengthens his position. This makes him look like the captain that nobody thought he would.
I mean, you watch Leon far more than I do, obviously. But you see the last league game Leon played away in Nîmes. And Nîmes have a player sent off after about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then a second player sent off.
Yeah.
And it actually takes Leon to about 25 minutes to go before they can kill the game off. And it's Depay who scores both the goals.
Yeah, I mean, bear in mind that
he's been important
game,
for them, hasn't he? Yes.
Very important and very efficient this season. Bear in mind, they were playing 11 versus 9 from just before half-time, as you say, and it took them 20 minutes of the second half to get a shot on target.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a team that's struggling for function at the moment. There's no doubt about that. Interesting postscript. You know, we talked about Mrs. Marcelo afterwards, like putting a flag in the sand and saying, right, I'm having no nonsense from these ultras. Now, if we thought that these waters could do without a bit of oil being thrown on them, well, she's been on Instagram again. And
let's get the gossip and these wicked whispers, James. Let's do it.
No names being mentioned.
Mention them.
In this post. But it says, about leadership, a player who once belonged to an organised crowd can never be leader of a group. He will never defend a group. And yes, himself or the crowd that belonged. Real captain must have character, respect and love for the next. And not being captive for, I think it means by, ego and vanity. Congratulations, Memphis. You are definitely a real captain. Now, I'm not trying to put
always words, welcome in Marcelo's house.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to put words in Tatiana's mouth here, but she's talking about Anthony Lopez.
Right.
The goalkeeper, who's one of the biggest figures in the Leon dressing room and is very close to the ultras group. One of the main ultras groups.
Now, this begins with, don't want to put words in her mouth, but
yeah, this is what she means. Yeah. That's interesting. So the plot thickens.
It's difficult to see who else it might refer to. Now, Lopez is kind of bulletproof there. He's just signed a new contract. He's someone who's stable. He's one of the most important players in the team. But as this situation gets worse between the ultras and the team and Rudy Garcia, if there's not a lid on it, it puts Anthony Lopez in a very, very difficult position. There's no doubt about that. But whatever happens next, I mean, Memphis, who is a player that, you know, when he's been linked to big clubs before, I thought, are you kidding? I mean, you know, we know he's got talent, but really? Mm. Really? Is he going to go and establish himself at a bigger club? Mm. This is the sort of thing that thinks, actually, maybe we've got him a bit wrong. It's not just that he's producing at key moments, but that he can stand up like this, I think will make people look at him in a different light.
All right, let's round this little section up, James, by coming to you and talking about a team that when they were drawn in their Champions League group, their odds of winning the Champions League went straight out to 80-1.
Did you cash out in time?
Lukey the judge chucked a little couple of quid on them.
Did you cash out in time?
Andy, I'll get to that. I think you know the answer to that. They've now gone out they've had quite a dramatic week, really, because I'm going to talk about Inter, of course, for those who haven't filled in the blanks. They've had quite a dramatic, they've gone out of the Champions League from a position where you thought actually they've set themselves up quite well to go through here and they weren't able to do it, but they also went top of Serie A because of what happened with Juventus losing to Lazio. But give us a quick roundup of Inter's Champions League campaign under Antonio Conte, a guy who, let me get this in, James, a guy who apparently is just unlucky in the Champions League, according to you.
No, I didn't.
You tore strips off me when I said he couldn't do it
in
Europe.
I didn't say that. I mean, if you want to go listen back to my kind of assessment of Conte's campaigns in Europe, then by all means go back. Otherwise, we're going to waste 10 or 15
Are
minutes.
They Napoleon-esque, would you say?
Well, no, I mean, you could say it was snow in Istanbul rather than, you know, on outside of Moscow, which did for him.
Is Romelu Lukaku his Josephine?
Well, I mean, Lukaku has come in for a lot of stick in the last 48 hours on the back of the performance against Barcelona. He scored, but he also missed three chances that, to some people, Fabio Capello, for example.
Oh, right.
You can't miss if you're a striker for Inter and you've got something on the line, which is Champions League qualification. Hmm. Inter will look back on the group stage and say that we were in a very tough group. It was the group of death with Barcelona, Dortmund and Slavia Prague, who were much better than a lot of people were anticipating and had shown a pedigree in the Europa League last year when they knocked out Sevilla. And yeah, that is Sevilla's competition. But the regrets will be dropping points to Slavia Prague at San Siro on match day one when they needed a late equaliser from Nicola Barella to get a point. To have been in front against Dortmund as well, in Dortmund, and then to throw that lead away.
2-0 and then 3-2.
And then lose that game.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, as Conte was saying after that game, you know, we've signed players from Sassuolo and Cagliari. Well, those players, Nicola Barella and Sensi, who've become really important players, have been out injured. You know, Barella's had surgery. Sensi has had repeated muscle injuries and has had to go see Hans Müller Wohlfahrt in Munich for some specialist.
Is he the go-to guy?
Yeah, he's the go-to guy for that kind of thing.
What was his injury? Sorry.
So he's got a muscle injury. I think it's a groin injury.
Is he the Dr. Richard Stedman of groins?
No. I mean, Hans can turn his hands to many things. So they went into this game against Barcelona, and it was a Barcelona side that left Messi at home, that left Suarez on the bench at the beginning.
But when you say left Messi at home, I did that on purpose. It was, yeah. I didn't kind of like forget to pick him up.
It's not an error. sorry, Leonor. Yeah. And fielded an experimental team in which they mirrored Inter. Yeah. And Inter lost. And they lost again, kind of pushing for the win, which happens in these sort of things. But I think those injuries in midfield, where they were having to play Borja Valero and Matias Vecino, both, I think, are still good players, but not necessarily players who can play Conte football. Borja Valero is not dynamic enough, plays sideways, he doesn't play forward. And ultimately, that was their undoing. But, you know, they go down into the Europa League now. I'm not entirely sure Conte will prioritise that competition. I think Conte will look at the fact that he has a lead to defend in Serie A or a lead to extend in Serie A, and it will all be about winning the Scudetto and ending the hegemony of Juventus at in Serie A.
Supporters won't speak with me. Newspapers speak with me. Is my door is open 24 hours a day in the bank. I repeat, the last time I come here for work, for my career going better and better. Stop.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free.
or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the air in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
James, another big piece of news from Serie A is not just that Napoli have fired the eyebrows of Carlo Ancelotti and indeed the rest of his body, but they've hired Gennaro Gattuso. Now, yeah. I'm very excited about this because my basic understanding of Gennaro Gattuso is obvious, but you know a bit more about him than I do. Is this an appointment that's come up? Well, first of all, pick over the bones of Ancelotti's period at Napoli, but then also let us know kind of what they've looked for and what they're expecting from Gennaro Gattuso to take the club forward.
So this was coming ever since the owner, Aurelio De Laurentiis, decided on detention for the team, and he went on the radio and basically saying, you're going to have to stay at the training ground until you sort this out, guys. No wives, no girlfriends, no going home.
I love that a club it can still do that in 2019. It's amazing to me. It's probably against all sorts of European employment regulations.
And Ancelotti came out and said he disapproved of it, yeah. Which was... It led to some friction between him and the owner. Not a complete falling out, but it was like, you don't go against me.
Yeah.
It was a point of principle. And then the night after, there was this mutiny. Ancelotti ends up respecting what the owner wanted, the players didn't. And there was this verbal exchange, heated exchange, by some of the senior players and De Laurentiis' son. And all of these things led to this kind of, not so much a breakdown in the relationship, because I think as they've been keen distress, they are amicable, you know, be it Ancelotti and De Laurentiis, and be it Ancelotti and the players. And there's been a lot of speculation about whether there was a breakdown in his relationship with certain key figures in that Napoli dressing room. I believe that's not entirely the case. But as Ancelotti himself has said, the results just haven't been good enough under him. You know, they went into that game against Genk without a win in nine. They are miles off contending for the Scudetto, which was his stated objective. He came out in pre-season and said second's no longer good enough. So where they are now is completely unacceptable. And so the curious thing was is that on Monday, and they were playing on Tuesday, it leaks that the club has reached an agreement with Gennaro Gattuso to take over from him, regardless of what the result is. I thought Ancelotti actually was quite a dignified figure, still being at the tiller, knowing that kind of the next few hours, this was going to be his last game for Napoli, and he did his job. You know, for whatever you make of Napoli's record in Serie A this season, in the Champions League, they qualify undefeated. They have, taken 4 points from six against the European champions, Liverpool.
Yeah.
They've beaten a very good Salzburg side away from home as well. And if you look at the money that has brought in for Napoli, you can understand why it's with a heavy heart that they make this decision. But you know, Ancelotti, I think, feels he can leave with his head held high, is maybe a bit of a strong strong way of looking at it, but certainly feels like he's done an okay-ish job there. Gattuso comes in, and I think one of the reasons for that is he did a good job at Milan last year. Fiorentina, one of the clubs who've been sniffing around him because they've lost four consecutive games. It looks like things are falling apart under Vincenzo Montella. And I think Napoli, seeing that, thought maybe the time is now to move. If we believe Gattuso is the right guy for us, we have to take him, otherwise someone else would take him off the board. And so they have. Gattuso, his Milan side, only finished a point adrift of Champions League football last year. And you look at where Milan are now.
They've been a complete car crash for years here.
They've not improved. They've gone backwards. And there was a sense that he did a good job in difficult circumstances. Remember his first job in charge of Milan against Benevento when the goalkeeper scored and got I think it was Benevento's first point, and we're talking about like in December.
And
Gattuso famously said it was like a stabbing, which was
a little bit much.
Maybe you need to study up on your communication strategy. But I think there is a characterization of as Gattuso as a disciplinarian, someone who won't suffer fools gladly, who certainly will introduce standards and high standards. He's not this crazy shouter who'll, you know, sort of grab you by your shirt collar and have you up against the wall. There's actually a lot more nuance, I think, to Gattuso than people give him credit for. And I'm actually quite curious to see how he does.
And what I wanted to ask really, James, is, I mean, it is different because this is a far more talented squad than he took over at Milan, isn't it? So,
yeah.
I mean, he talked in his press conference after being appointed about he still thinks the top four is a possibility. And actually, we got a tweet here from Hrvoje Posavac. I hope I've pronounced your name right. It says, current seventh place in top five leagues, Spurs, Atletico, Bayern, Napoli and Lyon.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And that is absolutely amazing. But what is realistic for him here, do you think? And will they have a proper crack in the last 16?
I think you're absolutely right, Andy, in that this is the most talented team that Gattuso's had. The problem is that they're 8 points adrift of the Champions League football already. And while you can look at Cagliari and think, can Cagliari keep this up? I look at Atalanta and I look at Roma and I think they certainly can keep this up. If anything, they can actually get better. So I think he's got an uphill challenge ahead of him. The problem with that Napoli side for me is that it lacks balance. The only kind of, he's not a holding midfield player, but he's certainly a dynamic midfield player in that he gets around, he recovers the ball, he screens the defence. That's Alan. When Alan's not there, who's doing that job? And that defence, which they invested a lot in the summer, bringing Kostas Manolas and Di Lorenzo in, it hasn't kind of lived up to the expectation that we thought, you know, it would become one of the best defences in the league. Instead, yeah, I think you're looking at it being, I think it's the seventh or eighth best defence. And that's one of the things that's really holding them back at the moment.
Is it too simplistic to say that he's come in after Sarri, who's a completely different manager, who plays a completely different shape and style? And it would be very, very difficult for anyone, however many months it is in, to adapt that with the players that he had at his disposal. And he would have had to have been backed in a big way, not just defensively, but midfield and attacking as well, to actually find a shape that he could work with. And the second question is, just to bring it back around to Ancelotti, it's very hard for me as a kind of casual Italian football watcher to really know what type of coach Ancelotti is. If you said to me, what type of manager is he? I would say he's like a ultra kind of 21st century like player whisperer type guy who keeps all the big egos happy and people generally like him, but I couldn't tell you the style of football like he likes to play, like he's particularly known for. And I wonder if that's kind of held him back as well, given that he's followed someone with such a clear identity and philosophy that it's going to be hard for him.
Well, it's about intensity, isn't it, to a degree?
Well, it is. I mean, I've seen this over the last few days. Again, a lot of people going back to what happened at Bayern with Ancelotti.
Post-Guardiola?
Well, where the players were unhappy with the intensity of the training sessions.
Mark said that last week.
They were unhappy
the show,
with the fitness coach smoking.
It took a while for them to get to that point. And I think it's quite notable because I thought at the start of his Napoli spell. You had to credit Ancelotti because here's a coach who's won so much stuff and was quite willing to say at the beginning, I made mistakes at Bayern and I've got to look at that. And he recognised, I think, the drop-off in intensity between Guardiola and himself. And he recognised the potential for that to happen between Sarri and himself. But on the other hand, it's quite noticeable that it's kind of fallen apart in a similar time scale.
He didn't avoid it. He clearly hasn't avoided that. But he can identify it, but he hasn't avoided it.
I think one of the things that Ancelotti has been kind of keen to stress over the last few hours is that, you know, people, because there was a mutiny here, they think that mutiny was against me.
Yeah.
Wasn't against me. It was against the decision by the club to impose this detention.
Hmm.
Were there issues between me and players at Bayern? Yes. They absolutely were. And that was my undoing.
Hmm.
But here, not the case. To your point about Ancelotti's tactics, what kind of tactician is he? I think he's still a very sophisticated guy who's shown himself able to move with the times in a way that other managers have not.
Hmm.
You know, I think most people thought that Jose Mourinho, for example, needed to take his time out of the game to update his methodology and come back with... Yeah, more willing to play a different brand of football. Ancelotti's always moved with the times. And I'm sorry, but this is a guy who in the last 2 years has played, what, four games against Liverpool. He's beaten them twice. He's drawn once and he's lost only one of those games. And that was quite unlucky. You think of the save that Alisson made on Milik. So, but I do think when it comes to, it's interesting that it does often come back to training. It does often come back to the staff that he has, which again I think is not entirely fair. People look at the fact that his son is his assistant. His son has done every kind of coaching qualification that there possibly is.
Hmm.
I don't think you can say he's raccomandato, as they say in Italy, which is basically he's got the job because his dad's Carlo Ancelotti. I think he's done everything to kind of get himself in a position where he deserves to be where he is. But that is often something that is a flag for media, for clubs to say, hang on a minute, is this what the issue is with the players? That they don't feel that they can, there's no good cop to the bad cop. Do you know what I mean? There's no bad cop with Carlo Ancelotti.
No.
he's too avuncular. But yeah, in terms of where he lands next, you know, I think he wants to have another go at the Premier League. I think we'll have to see what happens with him. Because I think with Arsenal, for example, is that a right fit? I don't know. I don't know if the I don't feel that the club believe it is. I think they're looking for a different profile. But we'll get to a stage where whether they can actually attract the profile that they want and get that person in on time, and then see what results are like simultaneously with Freddie Ljungberg. Yeah, it could be just a waiting game there, where you're just like, actually, are our options any less better than Carlo Ancelotti?
His
CV will go up against anyone.
They've also got to pay him as well. This is Arsenal we're talking about.
But he's one of the, I think, more reasonable names that's been linked with the job so far. I can't think of many better coaches who've been linked with the Arsenal job, like realistically, so far. And clearly they're going to need a certain type of manager. We've talked about this before, and like I think the idea that someone like Arteta is going to come in and sort of be able to sort of imprint his ideas on a squad that's quite disparate at the moment. I suppose that is the thing that you'd think, that he left behind, for whatever reason, a kind of a quite loose situation at Napoli, and he would be inheriting quite a loose situation at Arsenal. That would be the concern.
Absolutely. That's a really key point.
Not necessarily a criticism of him as a coach,
no,
but is he necessarily the right coach to take on that situation?
I would follow up on that and say I think the culture at Arsenal's been rotten for a very long time, from top to bottom. Whether you look at the fan culture, you look at how the club is run, or you look at the players and their behaviour, you look at the type of the managerial situation they've had.
That's why the Luis Enrique link, before he retook the Spain job, was such an interesting one.
Well,
not necessarily because he's the best coach on the market. He was the best coach.
But he's a good fit.
Exactly, because he's the sort of guy who would come in, and there is a philosophy of football, but at the same time, he's not concerned about hurting people's feelings. Like when he went in with Spain, for example, he was like, well, yeah, you have had a rough time, but you also haven't been good enough.
Yeah,
so
fine.
Let's get our asses in gear.
And I don't think Mikel Arteta, it's too big a job for him at this point. And I think Ancelotti just isn't the right fit for him because of the kind of guy he is. I mean, James, you might disagree with that, but from what I see, it looks like it's... I don't think it's quite a poison chalice yet because it's still a big club with great resources and it just needs someone revolutionary to come in there and overhaul it. And a lot of top coaches do like to do that. But it's probably as near as you're going to get to a poison chalice at the moment, given what's going on there. And you wonder whether Ancelotti would be the right fit for that based on what Andy and I are saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think Carlo has always been someone who, let's say more recently, has come in and maintained for a while the situation that he inherited. And then when it's come to kind of just untying the team from his predecessor, be it Pep, be it Maurizio Sarri,
it's been hard.
That's when he's tried to impose on a team which had a very, very defined identity, something slightly different. It's been difficult, I think, even though I don't think his tactics are arcane or anything like that. I think quite the opposite, actually. I think watching a lot of Napoli's games, I've looked at certainly how they set up in attacking situations and think, this is very 2019. There's nothing 1990 about this. But I think in terms of where Arsenal are at now, I think in some respects they are right to look at things and think, is Carlo Ancelotti the right person for us right now? I think he's still a coach who can do a very good job at the very top of the game. But in terms of a rebuild, which is something that Arsenal need, I think, still.
Yeah, that's not the right fit. When he was in at Chelsea, 09 to obviously won the double, of course. You look at the characters and the players he had in that squad for at least one of those seasons. It was big names, big established players at the club, and he could go in there and lead that team, and he was incredibly successful doing so.
Yeah,
and the Arsenal situation now is going into something completely different if he went there.
Yeah. Totally, and I think people would say he extended careers at Chelsea, just like he extended careers at Milan. Unfortunately, a lot of the public discourse around Ancelotti is A, of people who haven't watched Napoli much or watched Bayern much under Ancelotti, and B, people who either think, yes, he's the saviour, or B, he's a busted flush. Whereas neither of those things are actually true.
Mm. All right, chaps, I've got a little vote for you. Show of hands. There's three of us here. We should be able to get a clear majority, unlike what I expect we'll see today.
Get me a sharp pencil and we'll talk about it.
The options are, would you like to talk about Joaquin scoring a hat-trick at 38, breaking Alfredo Di Stefano's record, or would you like to talk about Sergio Conceição accused of hitting another manager in the face?
I'd like to talk about Sergio Conceição because I think that unites us both.
That's one hand. What do you want to do?
I'm with Andy.
Let's do it. Motion carried.
Yeah, let's have it.
So
that's what Sergio Conceição said, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Apparently, we don't know yet.
Let's not go old Derek Bentley on this.
Yeah. So what, Andy, that's quite an explosive way of putting it, and I've done that on purpose, and legal problems be damned. What's actually happened here?
Well, no, we can say exactly what happened and what the facts are.
That's a good thing.
So Porto drew at Belenenses last weekend, which was a poor result for them. It means they're now 4 points behind Benfica at the top. Bear in mind that Porto won the first Clásico of the season as well, so they'll feel they should be in a good place. Now, there was a bit of a dispute at half-time, that is clear, between Pedro Ribeiro, the coach of Belenenses, who's the youngest coach in the league at 34, took over from Silas, who's now at Sporting, earlier this season. And Conceição, who's rather more experienced and rather more sure of himself. They're exchanging words at half-time in the tunnel. And there was a video released by SIC, one of the news channels, that showed Pedro Ribeiro going, he hit me. I haven't done anything to anyone. He's hit me. This is a disgrace. So what we know, no one's saying anything for the moment.
Right.
But what we know is that they were arguing that Pedro Ribeiro has said he's been hit. He's not come out and say Conceição has hit me.
Yeah.
Conceição has said he's not going to talk about the situation until after the pivotal Europa League game on Thursday night against Feyenoord. And if Porto win, they'll go through, having looked a bit vulnerable earlier in the group stage. But there's been a lot of talk about it from the back of that video. And the fact is, where Belenenses play now, and there's been a bit of a schism in the club, it's quite complicated. It's something we can talk about at another point, because it's a really fascinating story for one of the grand old clubs of Portugal and one of the few champions outside Os Três Grandes. But the Belenenses that are in the top flight are playing at Estádio Nacional, which is Jamor, where they have the cup final, where Celtic won the European Cup in 67. And even though it's quite an antiquated old stadium, although it's beautifully appointed and all the rest of it, the interesting thing is it has working security cameras, both in the entrance and the exit to the tunnel and inside the tunnel. So
should have cased the joint first, shouldn't they?
Exactly. So the disciplinary commission of the league can have access to those tapes if they want them.
Right.
The bottom line is, if something has happened, if Conceição has hit Pedro Ribeiro, the articles of the league say that he could be given anything from 22 days to 9 months worth of suspension.
It's quite a big window.
So it is big. So we're going to see what happens. It's a story that's going to develop over the next little while.
I'm going to choose to follow that one instead of election night curry. Yeah.
Yeah. Sergio Conceição, it looks like these days, he's still got that kind of grey flecked beard.
You wouldn't cross him.
Yeah. He looks like the kind of guy who would be really friendly to you, but he'd be so friendly you'd be mistrusting of it, and then he would just turn on you.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was feisty in the knockout games between Roma and Porto last year.
And his team are feisty, right?
Very feisty. But when Andy was telling that story, it reminded me, I was like, how many other kind of sort of tunnel fracas kind of caught on CCTV are there? And I was like, Porto? Hulky?
Oh, Christian Saponaro?
Yeah,
that was the Tunnel Deluge, the Estadio Deluge.
We'll watch what happens with interest.
So that will be interesting. For precedent this season, more recent precedent.
Wow.
We had an incident between Boavista and Sporting when Bruno Fernandes was sent off. Of course, a player who's got a lot of interest amongst our listenership, I know. When he was sent off, he kicked in a door on his way back to the changing room after he was sent off. Now, that was sent away to the disciplinary commission. The disciplinary commission asked for the video, and they got that from the Estadio de Bessa. They had a look and they said, well, you know what? He paid the damages. Boavista aren't pissed off, so we're just gonna leave it.
That didn't
so
involve another human being, or did it? That just involved a door.
Yeah, that is true. But so much of it depends on whether Pedro Ribeiro is going to push through his complaint. But I'm really interested to see how this turns out. I mean, my feeling is that Conceição, at some point, will end up getting a good job in Serie A. He's an absolutely fantastic coach. We know he's got that Italian connection already.
Mm.
He's a good tactician. He's got a strong identity of playing. He's built a great reputation at Porto. The question is, who would be next for Porto? Now, I think there are a few options. First, Marco Silva is going to have to rebuild his reputation somewhere. He was offered the job before Conceição, and Porto must be so glad that he turned it down and Conceição took it, because he's done an absolutely brilliant job.
Well, I hope Porto haven't been watching any Everton games this season.
Yeah. And the other one has to be Jorge Jesus, who seems to be in the newspapers in Portugal more since he's gone to Flamengo than...
It's a great flex, though, going to Flamengo. It's just a great flex. I love that he's done that.
Manager of the year.
It's brilliant. It's amazing.
Manager of the year.
It's amazing.
Okay.
Just give it to Jorge Jesus.
Is this ramble bias just because he looks like an older Marcus?
He looks like Marcus Bell's dad, yeah. And that's why I'll always be very, very welcome around these parts. If you're listening, George, you're welcome whenever you want to come in. Let's not go too much into Joaquin Betis. We know all about Joaquin. We love him. He's done brilliant. He's old. He's brilliant, still great. Everyone knows that.
Breastfed till he was seven.
There we go. You can never, ever get away without saying that. No. I actually forgot about that until I saw you on Monday and you were talking about it in the office. I thought, is Andy talking about breastfeeding again? Oh, it's whacking. So good on him for doing that and getting that record at 38, giving us old people hope. Games of the week. I'm just going to go straight in there and go Napoli v Parma, just because I'm fascinated to see what happens with Gattuso. Parma and Napoli are quite similar in terms of how well they've done this season, so that'll be a sort of decent test for Gattuso. James, what's your game of the week this weekend?
It's going to be the Derby della Lanterna, which is the Genoa derby. Both of these teams in kind of relegation trouble. I think there's only a point separating the two. Obviously, both have changed managers as well. So Samp have got Claudio Ranieri in charge, and you've got Genoa with Thiago Motta, who was his player at Inter.
Nice.
And Inter were on a, I think, 8-game winning streak under Ranieri, and then Thiago Motta was like, fancy going to PSG. And he went to PSG against Claudio's will, and everything fell apart for Claudio, and he got the sack. So it's going to be an interesting one, that.
It will be. That's great. Good subtext, good narrative around that one. Andy?
I'm going to bend the game of the week rules, and it is a game that's going to happen before we're next in your ears. There's a full Bundesliga midweek program coming up, a full English Awoka before Christmas. And the highlight of the English Awoka is Dortmund versus Leipzig, which is on Tuesday night. Real, real biggie that. And we'll see if Dortmund have genuinely recovered or they've just papered under the cracks under Lucien Favre, because that is a real big one at the top of the table.
And they call it, when there's an extra game during the week, they call it an English week.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. I didn't know that. That's fantastic.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Sorry, do it again. My fucking stomach's rumbling mad because I couldn't have my porridge because I run out of time. Come on that again, mate. Just come off, pick up the top of the sentence, please.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we're way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, and join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Why When Question Time is a Stack production.